Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 73, Jeff Cohen. I doubt many people don't know who Jeff Cohen is from Seller Labs. I mean, he is everywhere. I mean, every conference I go to, he's there. He is working the crowd. He is talking to people and listening to them, which I find refreshing, very approachable. And I think you'll hear in his background, you know, why he is the way he is and how I think that's been fine-tuned over the years. So let's get into the podcast. All right. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, man. And tonight's guest, he is everywhere. There is not a place I go, an event, a conference that he is not. I mean, I just don't know if he's ever home, this poor guy. But when he's there, he is the life. He's just, it's like a glow. Everybody is drawn to him. Jeff Cohen. Welcome, Jeff.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, you know, and I mean that when I say that. You clearly command, you have a presence about you. You can command a room. And I've been at some of those rooms and some of those dinners, and you really have mastered that art.
Well, thank you. I try to really spend a lot of time listening to the people and understanding sellers. And obviously, conferences are a great way to get a collection of a lot of people in a room at one time. And I guess I'm kind of old-fashioned. I like to do business face-to-face. I like to shake hands.
You know, and I would say that about you. I think that that's one of the most – the noticeable thing is you're so approachable. You've talked to almost every single person one-on-one, looking at them in the eye, giving them a firm handshake. Nobody does that anymore. It's noticeable, though, just so you know that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I think a lot of it comes from a Midwest background, you know, growing up in the Midwest. And that was kind of always the way I was taught to do business. And I feel that, you know, part of the brand that I personally have and that the company has is that our people are what we put out there first, and our software is what we put out there second. And so it's a representation of kind of how we are as a company.
Well, and your company's name is Seller Labs, and we'll get into that and a lot of the different products that you guys offer. But you have a story, and I'd like to start about your story. I don't think most people know your story. This isn't your first company that you worked for. Matter of fact, you had your own company. But, you know, you're a college graduate. You've got a family. Where are you located?
So our office is based in Athens, Georgia, but I actually work out of my home in Chicago.
In Chicago, right. And is that where you're from?
I'm actually from St. Louis, so been in the Midwest.
Okay. And so you have family in the Midwest still?
Yep, I have three children and my wife, and we've lived in Missouri, we've lived in Middle Missouri, we've lived in Milwaukee, and now we're in Chicago.
Mm, neat. So, you know, thinking about, you know, your career, when you got out of college, were you an entrepreneur in college in any way?
You know, I really wasn't. I never really thought of myself as an entrepreneur, but I guess when I look back, I was, because almost every job that I had prior to starting my first site was working for a company in a department for a department that didn't exist before I got there.
So you got to set it up and kind of design it.
Yeah, exactly. Even like my college internship was at a company that had never had a college internship before. So I was the first intern. So I kind of made my own position. I made my own job.
What did your parents – were your parents entrepreneurs or were they business people?
So my dad was, I would say, kind of entrepreneurial. He was a home builder, and he, you know, worked for one of the largest home builders in the Southeast. But he ran all of their operations outside of Atlanta as they expanded. And then he went to run his own building company for a number of years. My mom was a teacher.
Oh, okay. Okay. And so it was expected you were going to go to college. And what was your undergraduate degree in?
I like to say my undergraduate degree was in general studies because I generally didn't study, but I still got a degree.
So you snuck through, right? You snuck through. But was it expected you were going to go to college?
I would agree. It was expected for me to go to college.
Yeah, especially with a mom who's a teacher, right?
Yeah. I mean,
that's tough.
Yeah.
But you went and got a business degree. Was that on your own doing?
Yeah, I kind of realized.
Or were you encouraged?
I kind of realized that, you know, I played around in undergrad a lot and that I needed to kind of prove academically that I could do all the things I knew I could do. So I went back for my graduate degree and graduated with, you know, I think like a 3.9 or something like that, which was kind of my big, see, I told you, Mom, that college was just for fun.
You know, I can relate more than you'd ever know. It's the same thing. But it's just so neat to see that accomplishment, right? I mean, it was the business school is an accomplishment. I think that, you know, anybody who goes through it would understand that it is a pretty good feeling getting through that and showing that you really can, you know, get that acumen and just really move forward with it. I think that's really strong. So what led you to sales? I mean, did you start? Well, let's ask, what was your first job then out of college?
So my first job out of college was running marketing for a wholesale distributor of specialty component parts. So that's a mouthful, right?
Yeah.
So I was really more of marketing communications, marketing, I guess general marketing, running corporate websites and developing like B2B communications.
Okay. And so that was using the degrees, right? And using your, you know, I guess undergrad and stuff. But now what led you to become an entrepreneur and start a company?
Yeah. So I guess when I met my wife, we shortly after we got married, like a day after our marriage, we moved to Columbia, Missouri. And when we were there for my wife's residency. And I didn't have a job. And I got a job there working for a textbook wholesaler. And I started to learn the textbook business. And we all know how expensive textbooks are. And after being at the company for a couple of years, for I think 2 years running their corporate advertising, I really wanted something more. I wanted something different. And I had an interesting opportunity to be entrepreneurial within a corporate environment. And so the company that I worked for owned the domain textbooks.com. But they had no experience in any way in developing a retail textbook or a retail website in general. And so I basically asked for and was granted the ability to found and develop the team to create and develop the site textbooks.com. And so I had kind of taken all of my experience from school and all of my experience from working and then had to kind of flip it on its head to learn a totally different side of business, which was the retail side of business. And, you know, one of the things I've learned, and I know we're going to talk about some of this as we go, one of the things I've learned is that you surround yourself with people smarter than you. So the first thing I did was I went out and I hired some really veteran retail e-commerce people actually out of the Boston area who had worked for TJ Maxx and had worked for smartbargains.com and some other websites to come work for me in helping us build out that textbooks.com operation.
Well, what did they specifically bring? So what, give me an example of somebody that you brought in and what you were hoping that they would bring, and did they bring it?
Well, I think, you know, what you first have to do is kind of say, what do you do best? And so what I knew that I did best was general project management, and I understood marketing just from my background. So I went and I found somebody who understood customer service. Okay. I hired a customer service manager, I don't remember all the titles, who was responsible for developing the whole customer service team, how we were going to answer the phone calls, how we were going to answer the emails, all the other components of customer service.
How many years ago was this?
Well, I want to say this was like 2006, 2007.
So the technology wasn't as advanced as it is today, not even close, right? So you're dealing with you had to have some real technical skills to put, you know, there wasn't a lot of CRM and stuff like that back then, you know, that was off the shelf, correct?
No, I mean, today you could do that with Zendesk, right?
And, right.
And the SaaS applications were not there, so you had to, I mean, just give you a silly example, our phone system, right? We had to go buy a whole phone system to implement for the routing of the phones and the calls, which you can all do now through websites.
Right, right. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So you really had to have talent back then. I mean, you couldn't, you know, just have a skill set. You had to bring somebody with talent and knowing how to get all that stuff put together. It's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, the challenge really was, how do we do it in a way that we knew could scale quickly? Because we knew with our website and our plans, the goal was to be a $10 million site within the first year. So we had to not just build this as we were building it, like we were building a small operation. We were really building this to be a $50 to $100 million operation within, 3 to 5 years.
Wow. And, you know, I think about the show Shark Tank, and they talk about that, you know, when you get that Shark Tank push, right, all of a sudden they're going to get stuck with a gazillion orders and they don't have the infrastructure in place. Well, you're thinking the same thing, right? When you went and rolled this out into a community, you had to be ready. I mean, right? You had to be ready.
Well, we had a strategic advantage, right? The funny thing was that people would tell us they had bought from our site, even though our site had never been, live, just because the name had such value in the market, right? And back then in the web, generic searching was kind of how everybody searched. And if you recall, web browsers didn't work like they work today. So if you actually typed the word textbooks into your web browser, you went to textbooks.com. You didn't go to a Google search. So we had a lot of natural traffic that came to the site because people just were typing that directly into their browsers.
That's so cool. Is the business still in business?
The business is still in business. And I guess one of the things I'm proud of is that my team is still running it, even though I'm no longer there.
No, that's really cool. That says something. And the fact that they sustain the business, is it privately owned or is it owned by one of the big, like an Amazon or something like that?
So it is privately owned, yes.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. Okay. And they've been able to maintain it. And did you hit your sales goal? Did you hit your $10
million? So as a private company, I guess I'll stick by my non-disclosure, but I would say that we more than exceeded our goal in our first year.
And overall,
overall the site has been very successful and has built itself out to be a very profitable operation. And it was one that if you look back at where the company as a whole was and where the company is today, the site now drives a significant portion of the revenue for the overall operations. They as the textbook industry and the wholesale industry changed, they were able to use this as a driving part of their change.
Well, and if they didn't, they would be out of business, right?
Right.
I just can't imagine that they would have survived. And I think, who had the vision? This was your idea?
So I would say it was a collection of the CEO's idea and my idea. We had been pushing for them to have a retail presence for some period of time, but when you had, I think at that point we were like a 30 or 35 year old company, it was hard. It's hard to pivot when you're that old as a company, and so it took a little poking and prodding.
It's visionary though. I mean, it's just so neat to see a visionary. That you got to experience that. That's an amazing experience. Okay, so we go forward. So you leave textbooks.com, and you were the CEO there. I mean, so it was you had a pretty big job there. How did you get to Seller Labs?
Yeah, so I'll make that story short. But I went to go work for a company called Campus Books, which was kind of like Kayak for college textbooks.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, my first hire at that position was a guy named Brandon Checkitz, who is one of the co-founders of Seller Labs. And Brandon, after about 3 years of working for me, Brandon had developed a website called bookscouter.com, mm-hmm. which became pretty wildly successful on its own. And I remember the conversation I had with Brandon where Brandon said, I need to leave because this site's making a lot of money and you don't pay me much. And I said, that's awesome. Good luck. You and I will do business together someday because we just worked well together. So Brandon left to go do Book Scouter. And while Brandon was doing Book Scouter, he kind of stumbled into this world of USPS auctions. And he met a guy named Paul Johnson. And Paul is the other co-founder of Seller Labs. Well, Paul and Brandon were at these auctions buying skids. And so when we say things fell off a truck. This is literally things that fell off the USPS truck and would be put up for auction. And it was a live auction back then. And you would come to the auction and you'd look at these big boxes in Gaylords, and you would have to estimate what you thought the value of those boxes were, and then you would bid on them. And they started doing these, and then Brandon called me up and knew that I kind of had a background in operations. And so I started working with Paul and Brandon to kind of scale out their business. And we took it from I guess they started it as working out of a storage shed to a 4,000 square foot like dental office, you know, like a strip mall office, to a 10,000 square foot warehouse, where at I think our peak we were processing two truckloads of books a week, as well as several skids of general merchandise products. And we were also starting to buy some products with wholesale. And so
now, let me just get this right. So they really, you guys were, you know, a warehouse, right? So you received goods and you just happened to get them through liquidation or whatever,
right,
or auctions, whatever. But you guys were really just a processing center, sending it in, selling it on Amazon, I assume?
Yeah. So we were using FBA, but we were also doing a lot of merchant fulfilled.
Okay, so it's nothing different than most people that would be listening to this podcast, right? They have a small operation. It grew. Now, at that point, you didn't have 28 employees, right? So,
right.
So you had a few people working there, and you're pumping stuff out.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Brandon, you know, is a programmer by nature, so he was writing all of our applications that we were using to process everything.
So you were using like his Book Scouter program to find books and do the kind of the old scan power thing, right? One of the early kind of forms of that, right?
Yeah, our books would come in, they would be scanned, and then using Book Scouter, we would determine whether they went to FBA, whether they went to Merchant Fulfilled, or whether they went to the garbage.
Okay, and process them through.
Yep.
And so he was a computer guy, and the other gentleman was a computer guy too?
Yeah, Paul was. We always like to joke that Paul was the guy that got stuff done. So he could, if he needed to go hack and write some code, he would do that. If he needed to go to Target to do some scanning, he would do that. Paul has just always been great at getting things done, and so he just was kind of the, if we had the idea, the next day Paul would figure out how to make it work.
What I appreciate about this story so far is that you guys all, and you included, were hauling books, which is not an easy thing. Andy Slamons always talks about how heavy he did a pallet of books. He said, never lift books again. My back wouldn't move. It couldn't move, you know, for a couple of days. But you guys literally had to touch the product. And I don't think – it's one of those things that I think, you know, some software companies, you know, they think it goes this way. And then – and when they see it, they're like, whoa. I didn't realize it was that, you know, and you guys came up the other way. You went up the hard way to get to the development of the software. It's really interesting. Okay, so you guys are going forward. Business is good, I guess?
Yeah, business was good. Margins were tight, right, because that's just the way books worked. And we Brandon and Paul decided to go to an SCOE show, the seller conference in Seattle, to look to see if there was software to help us grow the business. And the SCOE show in Seattle was a very strong book show many, many years ago. And so
were they thinking that this would just be a bigger book business, right? Is that what their vision was
time? They knew a lot of booksellers went to the show, and they just kind of thought maybe there's a way to go out there and find some software to help scale the business that we don't have to write everything.
Okay.
And what they found when they got to the show was that they felt they had better software than the software that was being presented at the show, you know, back in 2012, 2013.
And this was stuff they had written themselves, probably crude because they just did it to get the process through, right? It wasn't designed to be, you know, all the flashy stuff, right?
Right. So we had a whole inventory management system, and obviously there were several competitors in the space that had that. But the one thing that we had that we thought was kind of unique and different was what has now become Feedback Genius. And I guess the struggle that we had in selling books was that, you know, if you take all the proper time to evaluate a book and you mark it as acceptable and then a customer buys it and then they get it, they're going to still complain about it because it's in acceptable condition. So we were getting lots of negative feedback. And what we needed was a way to target messages to only people who were buying the good books, so we could use that feedback to offset the negative feedback that we were getting from the acceptable and the, you know, and the good books. And so that was really kind of where Feedback Genius was born, and was solving, you know, a problem for us.
Right. That's right where I was going. Again, when I talk to successful businesses and successful people, this is so common. You solved the problem for yourself because no one else could do it. I love it. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to hear a little bit more about Feedback Genius, because I'm interested to know why people should be using it when they're not, and what level is their business ready. Are they ready from day one, or do they have to scale? Let's take a quick break.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com. All right. I hope you enjoyed that. In this segment, we're going to talk about the specific products that they offer, Feedback Genius, Scope, Snagshout, and SearchRank. We spent a lot of time on Feedback Genius because I think that's most relevant for people. Again, contemplate this. You're selling X. You'd like to sell X plus, right? You don't want to have to work harder. Right now, you don't have time. You have money. You have product. You just are limited on time. You're going to need help. He's suggesting that if you improve your feedback, you will improve your chance with the buy box. Seems logical, right? And if you get the buy box, we all know you're going to sell more merchandise. So therefore, it's kind of a silent sales rep for you. It's kind of that silent member of the team that helps accentuate everything. It helps fine-tune. And the best part is, if there's a problem, you get it right away. You know about it. And quite frankly, that's what you need to do. So I think this is worth checking out. I think the service is great. It's very inexpensive when you think about it. $500 a year is their most popular thing. Think about it that way. $500 a year. For $500, if you could grow sales just 0.5%, life is good. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Jeff Cohen from Seller Labs, and we're just really getting to the Seller Labs story. And I appreciate it because I didn't know most of this. And I love the fact that where we just left off was they had a problem, right? They, as you eloquently put it, right? Crappy books, people get it and they're like, hey, this book is crappy. Well, we told you that, but that's really what it is. But not all of them were. And so you were looking for a way to get to offset those because they're going to complain no matter what. And that's what your premise was, right?
Exactly, yes.
So take us from there.
Yeah, so we began to convert our software because the way our software was written was not really designed for multiple users to be using the software. And I believe the date is somewhere around April of 2013. Feedback Genius was kind of released as a public for sale software with very little marketing. We just kind of put it out in the space to kind of see what was out there and if anybody wanted it. And we continued to run the book operation. And I remember I was kind of involved and then not involved a lot at that time. I had another job and I was just kind of consulting those guys kind of along the way. And they called me up one day and they said, hey, you know, that software, it's starting to generate some sales. Like, we're making a couple $100 a month. This is kind of cool. And Brandon had said to me, you know, I'd love for you to take a look at what we're doing and see if there's a way to help us grow. And I'd kind of said okay and ignored it and, you know, didn't think much of it. And then about 3 months later, he called back and he's like, we're getting, you know, a lot of signups on a daily basis. I think I have something. Mm. And at that point in time, Brandon and Paul decided to leave the warehouse operations, and they had a warehouse operations manager, and to move into a, I think it was like a 200 square foot office space in downtown Athens with two college programmers, like interns, I guess is what you would call them. And that was, I guess, kind of the birth of Seller Labs, when they kind of separated the warehouse operation from the software operation and really started to focus kind of full time on developing the Seller Labs Feedback Genius software. And we saw some pretty good growth in 2013 and into 2014. And I want to say it was around June or so of 2014 that we made a decision to close the warehouse and focus all of our efforts on the software side of the business.
We That's just kind a of difficult felt, decision.
You know, it was, but it wasn't. Anyone that deals with warehousing and books and products know that there's a lot of, you know, it's harder. It's hard to scale that kind of operation. You need a lot of cash. So we were constantly pouring everything into the business, and just kind of felt that Seller Labs was a little bit more to the core of what we were good at. We didn't know that that's what we were good at until we really got in and started doing it.
Well, you know, it's just because it was their baby when they started, right?
Yeah.
You know, it was so, I mean, that's the point I'm trying to get to, is that it's, you know, it's so hard to, you know, but I guess, you know, the fact that they were programmers, the fact that they were computer savvy and all that, it probably was their lead to where they were going. But it's interesting for somebody to give that up. I mean, I don't think people give up legacy businesses very easily, and that's probably why so many of them are in trouble when they really do need to.
I think the hardest part for Brandon in making that decision, Brandon at his core, one of his goals in all of his businesses is to provide employment. And so I think the hardest part for Brandon in giving up that business was the potential of people losing their jobs. And so we actually found somebody to kind of sell the operation to. I guess essentially we gave it to him. We didn't really sell it to him. And so I think there was a little bit of a relief on Brandon's part that he wasn't closing a business down and making people lose their jobs, because really at the core of Brandon and what he's trying to do with all the businesses that he runs, and we could do another whole podcast on all the different businesses that Brandon runs, is to provide employment and provide jobs, even before, you know, providing good software. So that's really a core fundamental quality of our company, is to, you know, make Athens, Georgia a better place by providing employment and making it a tech hub.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
It's a neat story. What I love about it is you guys were fixing a problem and boom, a business appears. And that's a very – I interviewed Dan Miller, and Dan Miller, you know, the famous New York Times author. And he said, you know, Steve, when I get three people asking me about a problem, you know, like, hey, you know, have you seen this or whatever, three people, that's his number. I see a business right there. He sees an opportunity.
Right.
You know, it just happens, right? And so I just see such a common thing. We'll talk about Feedback Genius. You know, it says automate Amazon product reviews and seller feedback anywhere. So, you know, I've seen a lot about product reviews. That's a hot topic out there, right?
Right.
And negative feedback and getting it removed, and now apparently there's an issue where they don't have the bubble available and blah, blah, blah. I see all that jazz. And I think to myself, why does somebody – want to have help with feedback?
Yeah, so, you know, there's really two reasons you want to target. There's three reasons you want to target feedback. So the first reason you want to target feedback is customer service. And if you understand Amazon and you understand Amazon's goals and principles, the customer comes first. And so you want your messaging to your customers to be an extension of your brand, an extension of the purchase. And so we always tell people your first goal in messaging your customers should always be customer service. If they can reply back to you about a problem, that's better than them opening a case with Amazon. It's going to help your overall seller performance rating and different metrics like that.
A better seller performance rating helps with sales, correct?
Correct. So in general, we're going to help you as a reseller win the buy box, or as a private label brand, get better rank for your product. And so the main factors that help you with a reseller is going to be your seller performance metrics. And then it's going to be and there's a combination of those metrics, which include your feedback score, which ultimately determine how and who wins the buy box. If you're on the brand side of the equation, they're going to be looking at your product quality and your product performance, as well as your overall conversions and your reviews. Your reviews as a seller, whether they're for product or for the seller, become your social proof. That is the way that you're proving to Amazon that you're treating your customers correctly.
I've seen people say that, you know, I've gotten a bunch of negative reviews on the product and they actually removed it from the catalog and say, I'm not available to sell it. And so that's an example, right, where, you know, hey, they're saying, you know, enough people have said there's a problem here. Steve, we got a problem. We're taking it down, right? That's reasonable.
Yeah, and you're going to see that both on the seller performance side and sellers getting shut down for that reason, as well as the product side.
Right, the product side too. So, you know, I'm a busy guy. I'm trying to run a business. I don't have a lot of time. You know, I'm not trying to sell your program. I'm just trying to understand it, right? So I'm trying, you know, Harvey Specter said it so well. I need to buy time, Steve. One thing I have money. I've got a lot going on, but I need to buy time because all these little things are adding up, and now I have no time. That's the one thing I don't have. So tell me what Feedback Genius would do for me versus me doing it myself.
Yeah, so the only way to message your buyers and request feedback on a DIY, do-it-yourself type of process would be to literally go into the buyer messaging system and to individually write emails to your customers.
Dear Jeff, thank you so much for buying our product.
Yes, now maybe you can have some pre-written templates that you're cutting and pasting, but you have to literally go in and manually do that. Or you can just have the hope strategy, which is the I hope Amazon sends them requests and I hope they reply to those requests.
And not many, you know, I think about our eBay store where we have thousands of feedback, right? Because that's the whole basis of eBay. On Amazon, and we've been FBA since 2011, and we have hundreds. I don't know if we're over 1,000, but that's not unusual, right?
No, the general percentage of eBay sellers are going to respond. eBay buyers are going to respond at like a 60-70% response rate, where Amazon sellers without request are going to respond at a 1-2% rate. So it's a significant difference.
And so that 1-2% is a big deal, right? So a negative, and this was where the premise came up for the idea of this, right? One negative, you need to have a lot to offset that negative, right? Because percentage-wise, right?
Nobody,
so if you only got two feedback and you have one negative and one positive, it's 50%.
Nobody knows the number, but I've had somebody tell me before they believe it's one negative equals 45 five stars. Now, I have no way to know whether that number is correct, but that's just a number somebody shared with me. And I don't know, you know, there's probably some equation in the Amazon algorithm to determine that. But a negative will hold a lot more weight than a positive.
Okay. Well, this service is not free, correct?
Correct. Well, actually, depending on the size of your account, it could be free.
Okay. So tell me about that. Tell us what the cost is.
So we start with a 30-day free trial where you get 10,000 messages. And then our free plan gives you 100 messages per month. And then the plans start to increase there. It's a volume consumption-based model starting at $20. So you get 1,000 emails and then going up from there.
So if you sell 1,000 items, generally speaking, the small account is the right one for you. That's about 1,000 emails.
Yeah, it depends. You know, some people like to send one message. Some people like to send two. So it's really kind of up to you.
Okay.
But one of the things you kind of spoke to earlier was I don't have a lot of time. So the beauty of a system, whether you're going to choose ours or our competitors, and I would understand there's other people in the market. Our system, you go in, you set your templates, and you're done. And so you can do it once and do a set it and forget it. We do recommend that you kind of come back and check on it every once in a while, because like anything, you can tweak your messages and improve your response rates. But you can just kind of get it going. And to kind of illustrate the story, we had a seller recently who I've actually been poking and prodding. You happen to know him and he lives nearby you for over a year to join my service. And I finally wrote him one day and said, what do I need to do? Are you using a competitor? And he said, no, I'm doing nothing. I just haven't had time. And I said, awesome. Let's set up a 30-minute meeting, and I'll walk you through how to do everything. And at the end of the meeting, he said, that's it? I'm done? I said, yeah. And he goes, why did I wait all this time to do it? Mm-hmm. I said, well, only you can answer that question. And he said, I feel like I've really missed out on all this potential over the last year and a half, over 30 minutes of my time that I just never made time for. So it's really just about making a little bit of time available to kind of get the process started. And then the process pretty much works for you. And you don't have to think about it.
Well, then let me get specific on that particular account, right? So it's a private label seller, sells a ton of private label. What's he expecting now? What can he expect, right? So he spent 30 minutes, which is nothing, right? As the worrying, he spent more time saying no to you
right.
than 30 minutes, right, over the years. So that's past. What can he expect to see now in his account? How would he measure success? Let me say it that way.
Yeah, so we like to tell our sellers that they should see about 100% improvement in the rate of their responses that they're getting. So if you were used to getting like a 2% review rate or seller feedback rate, you'll get a 4%. Really what sellers have to kind of understand, and there's different metrics for them to check, depending on their product, depending on their category, depending on, on all those kind of aspects, the numbers do vary. Most of our sellers get somewhere between a 3-6 response rate on seller feedback. And amazingly, product reviews seem to be higher. We have people doing product reviews that could see a jump into the 20% rate for product reviews. You can connect,
especially if they had nothing, if they had no communication, it right. would make sense.
With product reviews, you can connect a lot more, right? You can actually extend the brand. You can actually offer tips on the product. When you're talking about seller feedback, you're really kind of getting down to a basic, are you happy or not? Did I do my job? And so we actually have a template in our system called Are You Happy? And it just basically says, thank you for placing an order with me. I would like to know, are you happy? Yes, I am. No, I'm not. And when they click yes, I am, it takes them to leave a review for your feedback, either seller or product review. And when you click no, I'm not, it takes them to fill out a customer service email with you so that they start a conversation with you about why they're not happy.
Right, because you want to deal with the problem, not third party being forced to deal with it, right? And then it becomes contentious, right? At this point, you don't know what the issue is. You sent the wrong product, or you wrong labeled it, maybe in that case, or what have you. Let me think about this. So if your feedback doubles from 3% to 6%, we're using some numbers there, right?
Yep.
Does that enhance my sales, do you think?
Yeah, so let's talk about it from I think you had mentioned a lot of your sellers are kind of fighting for the buy box, right?
Absolutely.
And so Amazon actually looks at a lot of their metrics in what we call buckets. So 100% is a bucket, but then your next bucket isn't 99, then 98. The bucket is 97 to 99. So in Amazon's eyes, a 98 and a 99 are the same number, but a 97 drops you down to the next bucket. And so what we tell people to do is to focus on the buckets and kind of moving themselves up as they look at all of their seller metrics. And so as you're using us, you're really focusing on feedback count and star rating. And so one of the things that a lot of people will say is, oh, I have, 2,000 messages. And I'll say, well, is that in the last 365 or is that lifetime? And they'll say, oh, that's lifetime. Well, Amazon actually looks at your 30, your 90, your 365 and your lifetime. And your star rating is actually based off of your last 365 days, not your lifetime. So your reviews do drop off over time. And Amazon is definitely a what have you done for me lately type of service, right? They have a lot of sellers who are constantly on the platform. So if your rating in the last 30 days begins to decline, you're going to see a decline in your sales and loss of share of the buy box. And so your rating of your seller feedback and your count is not the end-all be-all that determines the buy box, but it's definitely one of the many factors that are considered within the buy box. And so if you can do something to your account to help you jump a bucket or to maintain a bucket, then the investment of your time and energy and a reoccurring expense is well worth it.
Yeah, that's right where I was going. I'm thinking, this is a controllable, right, in some ways. You think it's not, but you're giving us a tool because, as you say, you can double the return. When you're sending in a box and it's got a ding in it, at some point when you're a seller, you say no. In the beginning, most people probably would send it, oh, this is great, and because they come from eBay or wherever.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, no, that's not accept. That's not gift quality. Stop sending it in. So you start to control that as you start to get negatives and things like that, right? So you start to enhance that. You're saying, hey, here's another way you can control the conversation, because if there is an issue, you're going to head it off because you're going to know about it before, quite frankly, Amazon does, right? In essence.
And in all reality, if somebody has something bad to say, you should stop and listen to what they're saying, because they might be right. And I think that's something we all have a tendency is to just argue of why they're wrong, but they might actually be right. I had another seller, I'll give you one other example, who was a wholesale reseller, and he, again, was reluctant to use our service because he thought he had enough feedback. And he finally decided to take the time to do it, and I remember, and I wish I had the actual quote to share with you, but I remember him sending me a note and saying, I can't believe I fought this for so long. I saw a 200% increase in my feedback count in the first 30 days, 100% increase in my last 90 days. And, I feel like I have a better touch point with my customers when there's an issue. And what rang true in his quote to me was, he said, I don't care if I ever get a single feedback from your system. The fact that I know I have a line to my customers to give them an avenue to communicate with me is an insurance policy on my account.
Right, for $500 a year.
Right, and in his mind, that was the biggest value. So I think there's different values for different people at different stages in your business.
Well, and it's a customer service department you don't have to hire, right? It's 40. I'm looking at your most popular plan, the medium plan, $40 a month. So I'm thinking $500 a year. So for $500 a year, all I have to do is sell X amount of more, right? In theory, if I'm going to get more of the buy box, I paid for it. But then, and that's great, right? But I hired a customer service team and didn't have to pay for it, in essence. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, okay, that's a no-brainer. I get it. I get it. All right, that's cool. I love it. I see the value. I can see why. Do you recommend sellers, small sellers, start out with this, or does it evolve into it?
So,
because it's always, I spend my money, I got so many fees, I got everybody's charging me a fee, and blah, 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 blah. What do you recommend?
I don't know if you mind if I name drop, but there's a guy in the community. His name is Bob Willie.
Oh, we know Bob.
Okay, so Bob was at a dinner, and he was talking. I don't remember why he was talking about us, but he said, I don't understand. Every seller should sign up for Feedback Genius on day one. And somebody said, well, why? And he said, because they're free. The first 100 messages is free. Why wouldn't you do it? It's free. Mm. And he was like so adamant with this group. I had 5 people from the group come up to me the next day and go, you need to go talk to Bob, because he was just telling everybody why they need to sign up for you. But I think it's true. We don't cost you at the beginning. And so even if you want to sign up for us and you're generating, let's say you're generating 100 sales a day, I'm sorry, 100 sales a month, and you're only sending messages to the first 50 because you're doing 2 messages, it's at least better than doing nothing. So you can use it to get something going until you've got enough sales to justify wanting to spend the money. And then at that point, you just start spending more to get more, and it's there. And if you choose to never do it, then at least you've solicited your first 100 orders every month. And it's free. So there's really kind of, I guess, no reason not to try us, because it won't cost you if you don't want to pay.
And I guess the logic there too, thinking Bob's thinking, is the beauty is you never really have to deal with it. If you set it up right from day one, you never get to a place where you need it because you've had it all along. And so I can see the value in that. I love it. Okay.
And I would say that's, Steve, I would say that's in theory, because you really should – with any software, never just set it and forget it. You are paying money. You should manage the software to its fullest potential. But yes, in general, you are correct.
Yeah, logical. Okay, I love it. Okay, and I see it. You know, $40 a month. That's the regular. That seems to be the most common thing. You know, and everybody's like, oh, I'm getting feed to death. But again, what would it take to hire a customer service department, right? What would it take to put a phone system or a control system in? Or how much is Zendesk, right? And then to fill it out. If you ever dealt with Zendesk and all the zillion questions you have to have prepared, and then you still are involved in it. It's not like you can – that's one you can't just walk away from. So, okay.
Well, coming back to software as a service in general, the beauty of where we're at today, and we talked about this, you know, earlier in the podcast, was – each one of these used to be full-blown systems that you had to build out yourself. And now you can use somebody else's system for $20 a month or $40 a month or $80 a month. And it doesn't matter what software you're doing. You can run a whole Amazon operation for like less than $250 a month. That's amazing. I mean, that really is amazing when you can get the full – you're getting the value of the group – right, it's group purchasing power is what's happened to SaaS marketing, that gives you access to amazing technology for really what becomes a pretty minimal expense.
Well, and think about it. Right? Who's doing the backups of these things? Who's adjusting the code when Amazon changes their interface? Who's doing all? Not me. Right.
Right.
So that the things that most people, if you've ever run a business, you get it. These guys are not cheap, and they love custom everything. And by staying in this general way, you get to stay with the most current technology.
Absolutely.
Okay. So you have a couple other businesses listed under Seller Labs that I've never heard about. SnagShout.
Yeah. So
and Scope.
Yeah.
So tell me about these.
So Scope is a product in beta. It'll probably be out towards the end of March. I guess that's now on a recording, so we better hit that date.
You better put it out. I'm putting it down. I'm marked it in. It's in writing, so go ahead.
And it's a product research tool, which will help you kind of look at your everything from wholesale data and uploading lists to looking up products on Amazon and seeing how competitive they are as to whether you want to private label them. And then SnagShout is it's actually a pretty cool site. It's something you might be interested in as a private label owner or just as somebody who likes products. So we have we're a social media product discovery site. So we have hundreds of products on our site that are available at a discount, and we ask our customers to leave reviews on Amazon for those products in exchange for getting those products at a discount. The users are not required to leave reviews. But we do ask them to, because that's kind of the spirit of the site. And then we also ask our users, if they really like the product, to shout about it in other locations, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest, and really kind of share the brand with their social network.
Okay. And so this is, again, something to help enhance your business. You know, it kind of seems to be a theme with you guys, is that you're taking existing businesses and enhancing them, right? And just, you know, because I think that's the hard part of business. And I you know, you were the CEO of a business, so you can appreciate this, is that you get so caught up in the day-to-day, you know, you get mired in it, right? You just, Greg Murphy always says, his employees are just trying to get through today, Steve. They can't think about what we want to do in the future. We just can't get there, you know? And so that seems to be a common theme, is that you guys are enhancing my existing business. You're not changing a lot on it. You're just saying, hey, here's something we can help you with, and this is probably the spotlight that needs to shine. I think there's value in that. I like it.
I think we try to really understand sellers. That's why we go to a lot of conferences. That's why you know, we place ourselves out there and try to understand what the struggles are so that we can create software that solves those problems.
Software that solves problems. I love it. That's my line. I like that. Okay. So you have given us a lot of great information. I'm going to have some links. I think it's worth considering. As you said, it's free. I like free. Always like free. I always do well with free, especially for new sellers to try. You said 30 days free. Back on Feedback Genius.
Yep.
But more importantly, the first little bit, can you help my business specifically? So if I say to you, or do you recommend things based on our business size, or, you know, how do you help this size seller? And then you help a $10 million seller. How do you help both?
Yeah, you know, we've tried to kind of stay away from the consulting side of the business because there's so many kind of people out there that are consulting. And so we don't really do kind of one-to-one consulting. It's kind of hard to scale a software business when you're trying to provide one-to-one consulting. I guess if you bump into me at a conference, I'd love to sit down and understand your business and understand what your struggles are and provide you suggestions based on other things that I've seen in the industry.
But does your software guide me based on my size in any way?
Well, so really we become like a component of the process that you are developing as a seller. And so we become a tool for you. And as sellers are developing their process, we're really a tool for you to expand. So for instance, if you are doing wholesale and you're using Feedback Genius, you're really looking for the seller feedback. But as you expand into private label and you start doing things like wanting to expand your brand, we can attach things like PDFs or videos to your emails to your customers.
Cool.
And so with Snagshot, we will work with merchants to really understand kind of what their brand is and how many products they need to be giving away and what price point those products need to be at for getting the movement that they're looking for. But we really, most of our software, in all honesty, is pretty self-service oriented. So you really can, you can sign up and use our service without ever contacting us. We do have a full US-based customer service team. We do run demos twice a week that you can sign up for on our website. So we do provide a whole knowledge base, you know, blogs, videos, as such.
Can you give examples of what normal feedback looks like or what some of the sample letters and stuff like that to use?
Yeah, so within our system, we'll provide you, I think we have 9 or 10 templates that you can use. If you don't even want to write your own emails, you can just use ours. I think your only requirement is you have to add your name.
Right. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel, though. Correct. You really are leading me there. That's where I was kind of going. I was hoping that you weren't saying, okay, Steve, send us your letter and we'll put it up for you, because that would be like panic, right? So you're helping us there. Okay. That's what I was looking for. Yeah. I can see the value in it. Simple to sign up. You're going to give me templates. That's really what I really needed the help with, so I don't have to reinvent the wheel again. I want to buy some time. So you're going to give me the best ones. I guess these have been fine-tuned over time based on experience.
Yeah, so we have several seller accounts that we work with where we kind of tune their emails in and they let us kind of use those as templates. And we have a lot of sellers who do well that never want us to tell people what their emails look like. So the ones that we are able to share from sellers who do well, we do share them in our template file.
That's awesome. Okay, very cool. Okay, so you know, the goal of this podcast is to help move people forward, right? That's always my goal. And I think, obviously, your whole business seems to be in that same light, right, to help them move forward and help them grow. Can you give me a tip that's not Seller Labs, a trick that you've seen out there that you think people who are kind of stuck in their business that want to move it forward, that they can go out and put into their business today?
Yeah, so you know, we do a lot around what's called agile programming. It's how we develop our software. So it's not necessarily Seller Labs, but it's a strategy that we use. And the biggest thing that we talk about within agile programming is you have to deliver, right? So you can sit there and you can plan for all the things that you want, but if you can't actually put code into the market, you're not actually delivering anything to your customers. And so we look at everything in what's called sprints, right? So sprints are a time period. We'll call it an undefined time period. A sprint can be a day, a week, a month. But it's kind of a basic goal setting. Like, what am I going to get done between now and Friday? And when am I going to deliver that? And so the one thing that I've seen when talking to sellers, and you've spoken to a lot of sellers as well, the ones who are successful and are able to move things forward are the ones who just go out there and do it, and they're not afraid to fail. And I think that the fear of failure constantly stops people from any level of progress. And so I know it sounds like it comes from a book. It's written about in a lot of books, but it really is true. We take our ideas, we implement them into code, and we try to deliver them. And sometimes they're successful and sometimes they're failures. And it's really a big thing that I believe stops people from moving forward in general.
Well, the way you described it in the sprint, it's either a failure or it's success, but it's fast, right? Because you committed to it. You've defined the period of time. This is what it's going to do. We're going to get done. And you're going to know if it fail, right? And if you fail fast, that's okay, because you can get right up and start the next one. So I think it's very sound advice. I like that sprint. I've never heard that. Not read those books, apparently. So
yeah,
going to have to expand my knowledge base. All right, Jeff, best way to get in touch with you. I'll have links for Seller Labs, all that stuff, because I said to Jeff in a little bit of an interim, we blanked out for a second there, is that, you know, I can see the value in our business because we need time. We do get some questions and some things that would be nice to have that just headed off so we could just deal with the exceptions. And I love the idea of it. So I can see some value. So I'll have links for all that. You're out on Facebook. You're out. Where's the best way to get in touch with you?
So I'm constantly on LinkedIn, Facebook, and I go to a lot of trade shows. So if you're ever at a show and you see me, I typically wear a shirt at all the shows that says famous on Amazon, so I can easily be spotted. You can feel free to come up to me and approach me and ask me a question, or, tell me something you don't like, about our service, or tell me something you do like. We're open to constructive criticism. It's the only way we make things better. My LinkedIn profile, I'd be happy to link my Facebook profile, my email address, my phone number. I don't really kind of hide myself at all. And, as a company, it's part of our goal is to really just put ourselves out there and make ourselves available.
Well, you are approachable. I'm telling you, it's noticeable. You usually have a white lab coat on too, so that's how we know you. And it's very visible at every show. I think we're going to see each other the next 2 months, you and I,
yep.
Because we're going to so many conferences. Man, I appreciate you taking the time. I thank you for what you're doing. I love the approachability again. I mean, to me, that being real and being genuine is what we need more of. So really want to thank you for taking the time tonight, and I wish you nothing but success this year.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
At the risk of sounding like I'm one of their sales reps, I love time buying options. Hey, $500 for some people is a lot of money, but when you scale up to this business, and quite frankly, if you're small and you can get this for free, I would do it, right? As Bob Willie says, get it for free because you don't have to pay for it up until a certain amount. Well, that makes sense. But if you get in that medium range and you're looking at every dime and you're saying, hey, I can buy more inventory with that, it's $40 a month if you get to a decent sized level. You're not going to buy a lot of inventory. All you need is a couple extra sales. That more than pays for it. So I think it's really worthwhile to think about getting control of that piece of your business and growing that way without having to buy more product, without having to pack more boxes. So give it a shot. ecommercemomentum.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.